Hello, patrons. We are excited because we're going to finally figure out a little bit more about blockchain and ICOs today because Alex Vandesande, lead designer at Ethereum Foundation, is going to join us. I'm very excited about this, Alex.
I am too. I've been hearing your podcast for more than 10 years now.
Oh my gosh.
I'm very happy to be here.
Well, and Patrick asked me today about ICO. I immediately flashed to your email that you sent the last time we talked about it. And I'm like, let's see if we can get Alex to explain this because he'll do it better than I will.
Yes, I expect that after this episode, I will understand everything about ICOs, everything about blockchains and cryptocurrencies in general. So, you know, just an easy ask. It's not.
I'm very happy to know that there's someone else in here you're bringing to explain it all.
You control when you get a chance.
I didn't know that.
No, I'm saying that I need to understand all of it. Currently, I understand nothing.
You always say that, Patrick, but it's not true. It's not true. You actually have a good understanding on the shows, and I've heard you.
That's how he makes sure he looks smart. He pretends like he doesn't know anything.
Unless I really don't know anything and I'm pretending to not know anything to get people
to cover the fact
that I actually
it works in all situations.
Yeah, we're crafty as French people.
Well, we've got about 9 or 10 minutes, so whatever you guys need to do before we get ready, welcome to go do it. I'm going to check some last-minute news here.
Last-minute news. The most important one every time. I'm looking forward to playing Uncharted Lost Legacy later today.
Are you?
I mean, tonight. Yeah. It's I bought it today on the PlayStation 4. It's been downloaded, and it will unlock in about 2 hours. I might be too sleepy to try it, but very excited to find out.
Digital downloads are the best. It sucks for people who want to resell games, but really, I really like the convenience of not having like a bunch of game discs and boxes just littering the floor.
I agree. And you know, the ironic thing is that with the Xbox One, Microsoft wanted to enable the reselling of games. Now, of course, it meant that they wanted to DRM the entirety of their games, including physical media. And that's why people got very angry and made them walk it back. But if Microsoft had had its way, then we would have been able to resell the games we bought digitally. And the angry internet mobs.
I still think the idea of reselling infinitely copyable items is kind of silly. Unless you're using blockchain.
You're selling the license.
It's kind of the point of the blockchain, I guess.
Yeah, you can create artificial scarcity, right? But then it comes to what are you wanting to do with this artificial scarcity, right? I can create a token thing that there's only one of it, but that doesn't mean that people will use it or people will care about it, right? There's no point in a game seller just saying, I'm going to create 1,000 copies of my games and that's it. I'm never creating any anymore.
Yeah.
And I'm selling it for that.
That's not the problem that was trying to solve. The problem was once one individual has paid for a license to use that game, in the current system, you can't sell it to anyone else. It's assigned to you and no one else. And that has nothing to do with the blockchain or with scarcity, really. It's just that if someone else wants to buy that game, are they able to buy it only from the initial seller? Or are they also able to buy that, you know, virtual?
What are they buying exactly? I think that's the question you have to ask yourself, right? Because this is sort of a past idea of you had something that it's yours, that's an object, and then you give it to someone else. But when you're just selling the right to play a game, like you're just buying the right to play a game in a sense, right?
Sure.
So, Does it make sense for you to have the right to resell that right? Right? Because you're not adding anything special to the system.
Well, it becomes, I understand the theoretical idea that you're not actually transferring property, but it's like paper money. You're not, you know, you're just buying the value that you assign to that piece of anything. And in that system with games, there are two issues. It's the rights to use it. I mean, if we were to take that thinking to its ultimate conclusion, then we don't really need to sell games at all. Like, they're not physical things. You just give it, you know, don't even, just the initial seller, they're not selling you a physical thing. So why are they selling it at all? It doesn't, yeah,
they,
you know, it's,
they are just trying to support a developer, but by reselling it, you're not trying to support a reseller.
Well, so maybe, then yes, you would be in that instance, you would be, the developer and probably the distributor, in this case Microsoft, would be getting part of that
in that sense price. If you're talking about like private like smart property and digital property, it would make a lot more sense in my mind for you to be able to sell, if you want to blockchain something, right, sell something on the game, right? You're not buying, maybe you are buying a piece of land of the game, maybe you're buying a weapon, maybe you're buying your characters, then you are reselling your characters. Then I think that makes sense, right? Because you are taking something you own and then you are reselling it.
But you want to make something that, it's like, you know, elegant math doesn't mean that the math is right. You want to make this elegant from a philosophical standpoint. And in this case, it doesn't really matter if it's elegant philosophically or not. The reality is, you have purchased something that you don't have ownership of, really, because you can't resell it. And that thing you've purchased is, in practice, that game, in actuality, the right to use that game, to play that game. But in practice, it is that game. And whether or not it is immaterial bits or whether it benefits anyone, the problem for the user is you can't do anything with it. And that is a problem that
doesn't... It's the same thing with my bus pass. It's the same kind of thing, right? I can sell my bus pass to somebody.
You've got a pass
to access a game and you want to transfer that pass.
But then maybe you should have been buying time, right? You have the right to use this game for a year or 10 times.
Well, yeah, that's up to the game maker. Right now they sell unlimited access. Yeah. The whole notion of ownership and what we pay for and access is in the midst of just being churned apart.
That's true.
But the bus pass analogy is really good because it's kind of the same. You're just using you just have the right to use that bus.
I mean, it's a little bit off because it's a physical card sometimes, but that fewer and fewer, like you can get a bus pass that's just an app on your phone that is kind of like digital access to a game.
I think the more concrete difference is that you take up physical space on the bus when you're actually using it. So you have to restrict it. So.
And when you're playing a game locally, you're not taking up anybody else's resource, exactly. Which goes back to what Alex was saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, if you want to know the beginning of that conversation, patrons, go get your MP3 because it did not start with bus passes. We are just a couple minutes out. Are you guys ready?
I am.
You know in what state I was born. You know that if there was a state in the United States of America and the Federation that I was born in as an American citizen, that state would be named Ready.
Is there a state?
We don't have a federation. We have a union.
A union, okay. Canadian, well, you have a federal government. So.
Right, that's a good point. We do have a federal system.
Hmm. I guess it's not I don't know what the difference is between a federation and a union. But.
One of them has the prime directive.
Yeah.
Aha. And clearly you don't.
All right, let's get going. Are you guys set? All righty. Here we go. Daily Tech News Show is powered by you and you alone. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support. This is the Daily Tech News for Tuesday, August 22nd, 2017. I'm Tom Merritt, Patrick Beja alongside, coming to you from Finland, but his heart is made of France.
I've never heard anyone describe me more eloquently.
Well, thank you, Patrick. It's good to have you alongside. We're also going to be talking a little later in the show with our guest today, Alex Van de Sande, lead designer at Ethereum Foundation. And Alex, I apologize in advance. We have set you the task of explaining initial coin offerings to Patrick and me.
Well, I hope I can.
I know you can. Well, if you recall, we talked about ICO in our abbreviated episode before July 4th, back on July 3rd. Alex wrote a great email that I read on the show, kind of explaining some of the more nuanced details about it. And so it's time to revisit this because we've got more and more of this showing up in the press. You'll see ICO this, ICO that, even the country of Estonia wants to possibly do an ICO. We'll talk about that. But let's start off with a few tech things you should know. Google launched a new subscription called Chrome Enterprise that lets businesses subscribe to Chrome OS for $50 per device per year. So it's an enterprise version of Chrome OS. Chrome Enterprise is compatible with Microsoft Active Directory, has support for VMware's AirWatch, with more mobility management solutions to follow.
I guess Google's traditional business model of ad wouldn't be as acceptable in the enterprise setting.
No, this is part of their enterprise cloud effort. And they had Chrome for Workplace, and this kind of seems to be replacing that. It's very similar.
The Super NES Classic went up for pre-order Tuesday morning on the Amazon and Best Buy and unsurprisingly went out of stock fast. More pre-orders will be available for other retailers. The Super NES Classic ships September 29th.
Ah, so did you get one?
No, I'm really not interested in those. It does have a nifty save state feature that allows you to save any game and even to roll back a few, like 30 seconds back if you die or something during a game. So it does have some bonus features.
Owners of the DJI Spark UAVs have until September 1st to update firmware, or the quadcopters will no longer fly. Very curious how they make that happen, but firmware update is necessary anyway. You'll want to do it because it fixes an issue that caused some Sparks to experience mid-flight malfunctions. Famously, a few of them fell out of the sky mid-flight. Most of them did not have this problem, but this firmware makes sure that yours doesn't.
How do they block it if you don't do it?
Well, I'm guessing if in the app that you use to launch the Spark, it checks an internet connection, it can disable it. But if you don't connect to the internet somehow...
Don't use your phone to connect to the internet.
Yeah.
Until, you know, as long as you want to use it, your faulty Spark drone.
Here's some more top stories. This one definitely catching the attention of folks in our audience. We saw it on the subreddit and in the Slack. CrashPlan has been notifying users it will shut down its consumer backup service and focus solely on small business and enterprise customers. Says they're two different businesses and they had to pick one, so they picked enterprise. They're trying to do their best to help you with the transition if you're a CrashPlan customer. All current subscriptions will be honored until their end date, and then you'll be given an extra 60 days to migrate after that. Now, there is an end date to consumer period, which is October 22nd, 2018. So more than a year from now. If your current subscription, let's say you bought a 2-year at once subscription, if your current subscription ends after October 22nd, 2018, CrashPlan will then convert you to a small business account for the remainder of that subscription, and you can decide if you want to stay on that once it ends. CrashPlan's also offering a 50% discount on Carbonite as a referral, though the Wirecutter and several of our own analysts in the Slack are headed to Backblaze. That seems to be a common other destination for folks. Our analyst PJC Reese was also discussing HashBackup.com and rclone.org as Linux solutions that offer destinations for multiple online storage vendors. And iDrive.com is another one you might want to look at. That's PC Mag's editor's choice.
Yeah, this is not, you know, it's never ideal when a company removes one of their tiers or types of services. It seems like CrashPlan is doing it the right way, though. They're giving you ample notification and making sure they honor your order. And so it seems like they're...
And you could get a business plan. It's $10 per month per device. So if that suits your needs, there's a few other support options and things in there. You could stick with them if you want. It's just that that's more expensive than Backblaze, and it's probably more than a lot of customers need.
Right. Android Police reports its sources says Google, its sources say Google plans to launch a new Pixel-branded Chromebook and a smaller version of the Google Home speaker this autumn. 9to5 Google notes the latest Google app APK includes references to Bisto, a code name that appears to hint at headphones running Google Assistant. The code includes calls for hearing and replying to notifications, as well as indicating the presence of physical buttons on the supposed device.
So which are you more excited about? A cheaper version of a Pixel Chromebook or some headphones with Google Assistant built in, kind of like the AirPods?
I think it will be really interesting to get tiny... virtual assistants in our ears all the time once those assistants are good enough that we can rely on them enough of the time. We're certainly not there yet, but it just, you know, my technophile sense tingles when I hear that Google is developing some kind of headphone-enabled virtual assistant.
I turned off Siri in my AirPods.
Me too.
I just want to double tap to pause. And I know that takes away the volume control, which is kind of annoying, but I didn't want to
that's the problem.
Talk every time I wanted to pause the stuff.
That's the problem. The assistants are starting to get somewhat useful in some situations. They're certainly not useful enough for those situations where you need to control more than just a few things. When they do, though, I think this is going to be, I mean, it goes along. It's basically we need an apt AI, and that's not happening quickly enough. But when it does, those things, I could absolutely imagine for some people in some uses, in some cases, that little earbud thing replacing your smartphone.
Yeah, they need to make them look better. Hopefully Google's will look good. U.S. mobile carrier Verizon announced its unlimited plan is splitting into three, starting August 23rd. A $75 a month Go Unlimited plan can reduce your speed anytime at once if the network's congested. So you're unlimited, except when they limit you. And it's all based on network conditions. Also, video is reduced in that plan to 480p on phones and 720p on tablets, no matter where it's coming from. Beyond Unlimited is $85 a month. That only reduces your speed after you pass 22 gigabytes. That's a more typical way of doing this. And video is limited to 720p on phones and 1080p on tablets. There's also some different tethering limits in both of these cases. There's a Business Unlimited plan. It's pretty much the same as this $85 a month Beyond Unlimited plan. It does have a higher 25 gigabyte threshold before slowdowns and some different tethering options. Customers on older Unlimited plans will see no changes except your video. If you're on an old unlimited plan, your video is going to be limited to 720p on phones and 1080p on tablets. Also, video on tethering is limited to 1080 as well. So I'm curious what you think of this, Patrick, from that side. Verizon went unlimited because T-Mobile kind of forced everybody to unlimited, and now they realize they are having problems managing their network, and so they're putting in some more limits on their unlimited plans.
So I don't really have big issues with the idea of limiting unlimited as long as things are clearly disclosed from the beginning. Because really, there are two types of unlimited. You have unlimited amounts of data. In France, we have limits on the amount of data, and you have limits on speed. We typically don't have limits on speed in France, but both could be called unlimited if you're sold unlimited amount of data but with a limit on speed, which in effect that reduced video resolution kind of is. I don't think it's that big an issue. What I have more of an issue with is those outrageous amounts that you have to pay monthly. It's Finland, but I pay 30 or 35 euros for unlimited, and unlimited everything in that case. But on the principle of it, I think the issue of unlimited, oh, look, unlimited is now limited, I think it's a little bit overblown. As long as it's disclosed, it seems like, okay, just to finish on this, as I said, in France, we have unlimited, we have limited amounts of data. So you'll buy, you know, monthly, you're limited to 10 gigs or 5 gigs or 20 gigs, right? So for me, something that doesn't have that kind of cap is unlimited already.
Yeah.
So maybe
they're
that's
just, they're saying you get speed up to 22 gigabytes, then you may or may not get full speed. Sometimes you will. Oh. It's all based on network conditions. Right. So it is a softer unlimited. These kinds of things were, like as you said, more annoying when you didn't know they were in place. They kind of hid it in the terms. Now they're putting it right out front. I actually think this is a great way of tiering prices to say you're going to be at the back of the queue if things get congested, unless you pay for a higher tier.
Yeah. And really, who needs more than 1080p on a tablet?
Honestly. Well, I don't like this for tethering because I just want my internet connection when I'm tethered. You're right. I'm probably not going to notice the difference of 720 versus 1080 on my tablet. But some people will. Some people have better eyes than me. And this is not the plan for them.
A study from eMarketer estimates the number of Facebook users between 12 and 17. Isn't Facebook 13?
Yeah, so you essentially have a full year in there of people. But it's the rate of growth, number of users. Right, so, right, yeah.
Right, sorry. So the users between 12 and 17 years old in the U.S. will drop 2.8% this year. Facebook-owned Instagram is expected to grow its 12 to 17-year-old audience by 8.8%. And eMarketer says for the first time, Snapchat will pass Instagram and Facebook for total users in the 12 to 17 and 18 to 24-year-old segments.
So Facebook teens leaving, by the way, 12-year-old Facebook users exist. They just call themselves 13 when they sign up. So let's not pretend that doesn't happen. And that's probably incorporated in these numbers. But teens not using Facebook, according to eMarketer, but turning to Facebook's own Instagram. So that's cool. The conventional wisdom has been that Instagram is putting the brakes on Snapchat, but this implies that at least amongst teens, Snapchat's doing just fine.
Yeah, that's a really, I mean, it says a lot. It says, first of all, Facebook isn't cool anymore. That's not, you know, entirely new. It shows the foresight of, again, a drum I will never get tired to beat. Zuckerberg seeing where things are going and making sure they are somehow present there by purchasing Instagram. Snapchat is still very cool. One thing which that made me think about, I don't know if you saw that Medium post by, let me get the name straight, Giuseppe Stutto, who's a developer of admittedly an app that takes advantage of iMessage, but he's explaining how he's seeing anecdotal evidence, but significant anecdotal evidence, that teens are using iMessage a lot more, essentially SMS. They just happen to be on Apple products in his examples. So I think there's a lot to explore about where teens are going, and he's arguing that they are seeing stuff on Instagram, Snapchat, all of those, but then going on SMS to discuss them and to be with their crowds.
I mean,
I thought that was an interesting one as well.
This is a confluence of events that makes it true. I'm not sure it means what he may think it means. We know that teens are more likely to have iPhones. We talked about that on the show recently, and a lot of that has to do with discounted iPhones and the fact that iPhones are cool. But we know that's true. And we also know that teens use SMS a lot. And if they're using iPhones in great numbers and they're using SMS a lot, they're using iMessage, whether they want to or not.
No, of course. I think the interesting thing in there is we might have a tendency of thinking that they're all on Snapchat and Instagram and those types of apps. And maybe they're really still a lot on SMS as well.
I think that's true. Yeah. I don't think SMS is seen as having the same opportunity as a social network. And I guess what he's saying is, unless you're using iMessage, in which Apple has got, you know, some apps and stickers and things and right. maybe has an opportunity there, I still think that something that's available on Android and iOS re-SMS is much more vibrant than something that is only available on one platform. Although, granted, a lot of,
sure. You know, sure, sure. It's just that I think the purity of the SMS system, which doesn't require, you know, accounts and, you know, they're not going to shower mm-hmm. you with ads and all of this. And maybe there's not even a question of monetization because maybe it's not as possible and all of these questions. But SMS might be, in essence, by design, something that is more popular and easier to grasp. Then we might... See, even your dogs agree, Tom. Even your dogs agree with me. All right, let's move on.
IBM announced a consortium to explore where the use of blockchain could benefit the food supply chain. IBM's blockchain platform will help companies implement better transparency and tracking. Nestle, Tyson Foods, Dole, Golden State Foods, Kroger, McCormick & Company, Unilever, and Walmart are all members of the consortium. And I want to bring Alex in a little bit before we talk to him about the main discussion story. Because Alex, I know blockchain part and parcel with what you're doing over there at Ethereum. And we're finding more and more situations, not just cryptocurrency, not even just fintech, where people are taking advantage of that public, you know, verifiable ledger that is the blockchain. What do you think of this story about IBM's food consortium?
Oh, the interesting thing, Tom, is that we talk a lot about blockchain as this very different and very foreign tech, right? But in the end, a blockchain is nothing more than a fancy new word for a database, right? A blockchain is in a new way for someone to write a database in a way that it's not in one computer, but it's distributed among thousands of computers everywhere. And there are many usages for it. And Bitcoin uses it mostly for timestamping. And one of the most, I would say, low-hanging fruit for it is just for you to be able to say, here, something happened at this moment of time. And I think that this is sort of what IBM is trying to do there, where you can try to follow everything that happened on your supply chain and online. So you could, in theory, take a product that is in your fridge right now and be able to see the whole history of it. And I think the advantage of that is that imagine that you can track all those products, then you can try to see if there's a million bottles of milk saying that they all came from the same organic farm. Maybe someone can go on the blockchain and check, look, there's no way that this farm is handling that much milk, right? So it helps for you somehow trust what they are saying on the package.
Another example of trustworthy uses for that kind of thing. Recently in France, there was an announcement that Microsoft is going to be working with Renault, the car manufacturer, to create an unalterable maintenance ledger of the things that have been worked on the car. And that's through the blockchain, obviously. So that's another similar use of that technology.
I mean, and it's only as good as the people who scan the things along the way. Don't get us wrong, but it is a really easy way to make that database that you're talking about, because this kind of scanning of cartons and crates and tankers is already something that happens. It's just plugging this system in so that the ledger side of it gets written automatically and makes it easy for you at the end, like you were saying, Alex, to be able to scan your own bottle of milk and say, okay, show me the entire supply chain so I know where this milk started.
Yeah, in the end, all you need to do is ask for those processors in the middle for them to publish their data in some sort of open format.
Yeah.
That's all you need. And in the end, using a blockchain or using any sort of ledger technology is a way for a lot of companies to agree on some format where they publish their data in a way that it's linked and it's not under the control of one company that
right.
can
one
take
company
the data off.
Change stuff, right? Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Hey, folks, so if you want to get all the... Oh, sorry, Patrick, go ahead.
Just last question. In the case of that maintenance, car maintenance ledger, does that also mean that it becomes absolutely impossible for someone to go in and repair something themselves in that case? Or I guess they can, but then it won't appear in the ledger. And so the manufacturer can say, hey, you actually did it yourself. That we're not going to
guarantee it. Anymore. Yeah. Yeah. Folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to Daily Tech Headlines. It's out there as a podcast at dailytechheadlines.com. You can get it as a flash briefing on the Amazon Echo and in the Anchor app. If you haven't tried Anchor, you can get a good check that out. Veronica's got stuff on there. Jeff Cannata's got stuff on there. It's all fun to swipe through on your phone. And we've got Daily Tech Headlines there as well at anchor.fm. That is a look at our top stories. Now, Estonia is not the first country. Russia and China have been exploring similar things. But Estonia is considering creating its own cryptocurrency called Estcoin. And it's not Est the therapy. It's Est as in Estonia. Estonia believes its e-residency program, if you've heard about that, they have digital residency that anyone in the world can get, gives them the edge because they already have a technology and legal framework in place for e-residence. And so it would be easier for them to put in place a cryptocurrency. Estonia's managing director of the e-residency program, Kasper Korjus, said Estcoin could be part of Estonia's effort to ensure its state can function entirely independent of its own territory, which I find fascinating, to be able to set up your government in the internet so that it's not tied to a physical location. Anyway, if you want to find out more about this, you can sign up at e-resident.gov.ee/Estcoin. But another thing they mentioned in this story is that they are considering an initial coin offering, an ICO, to establish this if they decide to go ahead and make Estcoin happen. And Patrick, you asked me today out of the blue, What the heck is an ICO? What is putting ICO on your radar, Patrick?
It's just, you know, I hadn't listened to the episode you did early July, went back and listened to it, and it's incredible. So what you said in that episode only 6 weeks ago or so, you were saying, hey, so there's this new term that maybe you've heard somewhere, ICO. It seems like something that's getting trendy. It was six weeks ago. I think I've heard the term ICO 15 million times since then. It's an incredible, like, and I'm not quite sure if it's a buzz that will die down. I think we won't know until long time from now, but it's like all of those, you know, Bitcoin and blockchain and Ethereum and all of those technologies, it's difficult to grasp and it's difficult to see. I mean, you can understand vaguely what it, how it works and what it is, but it's difficult to understand the advantage of it, really, and the value of it. And I think, Alex, when I got to that email that you sent, you explained a lot of it a lot more clearly than than I could have. So I was curious to hear you talk about it a little bit more.
So initial coin offering. I mean, I get the basics of it, Alex, which is I'm going to sell my coins, and that's how I raise money for the thing that I'm doing. But why has it caught fire in the last 6 weeks or so?
That is a very interesting question. So about Estonia, I've heard them describe their project as making a backup of their country on the cloud. And I think it is indeed a fascinating idea. And they are trying to clone their identities and clone a lot of things. And as I was talking, right, blockchains are about databases. And a lot about what a government does is doing databases. Identities are databases and other things. And properties are also databases. So Bitcoin comes along, and Bitcoin in the end is a large computer that pays for itself. That's the interesting part of Bitcoin, right? It's that all the technology, all the infrastructure that you need in order for the Bitcoin network to be run is paid in itself by Bitcoin. So the more Bitcoin value goes up, the more people want to invest in that infrastructure, and the more strong the network gets. So as technology has been progressing, more people have been figuring out more uses for this blockchain thing. So Ethereum comes along, and the purpose of Ethereum is really to help people launch their own blockchain projects, right? So it makes it easy for someone to create their own currency, or for them to create something that you do with that currency. And I think that's sort of where this whole ICO craze comes along, where it's very, very easy for you to create a coin in Ethereum, right? It takes, in the end, if you want, it takes 5 minutes of coding and probably 5 cents. And anyone could create some sort of coin, but you can create something more than that. You can create something that uses that coin. You can, for instance, say, look, that coin has some utility. Maybe you trade that coin for storage in a network, or maybe you use it as a rent of some kind, or maybe you use it in some sort representing some property, or maybe you can have some control of something else. And then because suddenly it has some utility, people see some value on it, and you can use that to raise money to try to build your project. So a lot of people are using that in so ICOs, I would say, is disrupting a little bit the venture capitalist market. Most of the startups in Ethereum are not being created in Silicon Valley anymore. They are being created all over the world, and they are using ICOs to raise money. To be honest, I hate the ICO wording because it's initial coin offering, right? First of all, it doesn't need to be an issue. You could create some ICO that sells forever. It's not necessarily a coin. It can be a token. It can be a vote. It can be anything you want. And it's sort of, so but I think the word is, you can try to use token sale or something like that. But in the end, so that's the word. That
indeterminate you, so tokenized sale just didn't have the ring that ICO did, I guess.
Exactly.
Well, so the thing is, the reason why the term ICO is popular, obviously, is because it mirrors IPO. But you're right. It means something entirely different. Really, what an ICO is a blockchain ledgerized contract that gives the purchaser certain rights or properties in the company that you're trying to build. That's really all it is, right? That's and it's also not controlled in the same way that non-cryptocurrency is, but that's what it is, right? You're just saying, all right, I want to sell, it could be anything. Yeah. I want to sell the rights to determine which furniture we're going to use in our headquarters. And you can buy that for that token, and that token is transferable and it's registered in the ledger, blockchain ledger that we have. And that could be one very goofy way of financing your operation, correct?
Yeah, but I think it goes a little bit more further than that, Patrick, because when you're thinking about a company, right, you're thinking, well, what is a company? A company normally is some institution registered in the Delaware or maybe registered in the Cayman Islands that is backed in the end by a bunch of documents, a bunch of lawyers, and everyone that is sitting on the board, the rules that they play by are being enforced by those lawyers and by whatever court of law the company is registered in, right? And that's what in the end, when you sell an IPO, you're selling a right for something on that company. And I think what is really interesting about the ICO part, and I think it's not the ICO, but it really is the governance part. Because what you could do is you could write your own company on the blockchain. You could write the terms of your company in the blockchain. You could write them the ownership of whatever they have on the blockchain. Maybe you could say, look, there is my company is governed by a board. A board is elected. The board is elected and then selects the CEO, and the CEO selects someone to hire someone, and that person will be selected to fund to get this money and pay salaries and etc. All those rules, in theory, right now they are mostly just culture of a company, but you could, in theory, pick all those rules and put them on the blockchain and make so that they are automated. So you could have a company that is controlled not by Delaware, but actually completely fully by the blockchain, and then you sell the rights of access to that.
And then you don't have Delaware or the Cayman Islands or anybody else's government involved in how that corporation gets started. That's one of the big advantages. That's a lot of reason people go with ICOs, is they don't have to follow all of the bureaucracy that's involved with an IPO. But how long before governments start to try to get their handle on ICOs the way they have, with varying effects, tried to do so with cryptocurrency?
Well, they are already paying attention and they are already talking about it. The SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, published a report where they were studying one specific ICO of a company which was called a decentralized autonomous organization, and they have decided that, and they reported that they consider that sale some sort of security. So a lot of companies are trying to adapt themselves to this new reality. But I think it's not, I wouldn't say that the biggest advantage is for companies to simply forego the bureaucracy, but it's also important on the investor side. Because in order for you to participate in an ICO or in a traditional investment, you usually need to be an accredited investor, which sometimes means you have more than $1 million on banks, and you have and sometimes means that you need to be an American, or you need to live in some place where you can trust the card system. With blockchain-based ICOs, what you could do in theory is that if you are smart, 15 years old with some access to Ether or Bitcoin, you could participate on that, and you could be on the ground floor in Uber or in the new Uber, which has, of course, the other side of the coin, right? Where suddenly, because so many new people are participating, you can have, there are opportunities where people are being led by shady ICOs or companies.
The safeguards that you get from the bureaucracy aren't there either. Yeah.
Exactly.
So it's basically doing, to put it in simpler terms that older people like me who were born before the internet will understand, it's basically doing to financing or transaction, but in this case financing, what the internet did to, I guess, pretty much everything else. But one example would be publishing, where all of a sudden you didn't need a huge infrastructure and investment to go and publish your information via newspaper. Anyone could just register a domain and publish a website.
I would say that's a perfect metaphor, because now exactly. But then you using the internet, you suddenly can be a band, right? You can be a video producer. You could share your music. Now, I think that blockchain is doing is really is bringing one new pillar, one new column to the internet as a whole, where now suddenly it can disrupt the legal system and financing and governance in the same way that it has disrupted other industries before. And it has some issues, and of course, in just the same metaphor, in the beginning, when people could publish anything, we had a lot of issues with copyright law and patent laws, and a lot of industry had to adapt, and the behaviors had to adapt also. We had the public had to learn how to best behave and what's correct and what's not correct. And I think we will have to go through that phase.
But even if we put more safeguards in down the road, it is an easier way for people to do something without having to have, like you say, as many lawyers involved and as much paperwork involved, because like 5 minutes of coding, you can make this happen. Now, in the future, it may take longer because of safeguards and things like that, but it continues what Patrick is identifying as that trend of permissionless creation, whatever it is that you're creating. Well, Alex, thank you so much for hanging out with us and taking the time to help us understand this a little more. I really appreciate it.
Well, the pleasure is all mine. Whenever you need me, you know where to find me.
We're going to read a couple of emails real quick. Thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit, too, at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. We've got a vibrant Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow. Travis, a.k.a. Mecha Gobbler, wanted to write in about the story of autonomized, weaponized robots that we talked about, the 115 researchers signing a document saying, hey, let's make sure we do this right. Travis said, this hit close to home. I work at the Office of Naval Research, where autonomy is a big area of interest. While I can't get into the tech, I can say that the role of the human in the loop is of great concern here, and there are a few stronger voices for responsibly determining that role in the military. As with many things the military works on, there is a devout understanding of the balance between the necessity of having a capability and the gravity of actually employing it. especially when it concerns taking human life. He's saying there are a few stronger voices for responsibly determining that role than the military. He thinks that they are paying attention to that responsibility. Thank you, Travis. And then Rich Straffolino, who helps write and sometimes host Daily Tech Headlines, has this to say about the cloud.
Hey, DTNS crew. The discussion around the transition from steam to electric factories shows that innovation in technology is often dependent on changes in process to be effective. We're also seeing this now in enterprise IT, with the transition from on-premises infrastructure, aka racks of servers in a data center, to the cloud. While the cloud is often a no-brainer for new organizations and projects, companies with decades of investment in infrastructure and workflows still struggle to justify the change. Apps need to be rewritten, IT staff needs to be retrained or shook up fundamentally, and organizational authority increasingly shifts from operations of infrastructure to software developers. These have been identified for over a decade now, and organizations are still struggling to keep up. If you're interested in more on the process of the cloud, check out the latest episode of a podcast I produce, the On-Premise IT Roundtable, which discusses why cloud is more than a remote data center. You can find it on iTunes or at gestaltit.com/podcast.
Thank you, Rich. Cloud, another great example of what we're talking about with the internet. And Patrick Beja is another great example of a lot of things, like Frenchspin.com is a great example of a place to get awesome podcasts. What else you got going on, Patrick?
Oh, thank you. Well, I guess Frenchspin.com is where you would go to find my shows, the shows I produce in English. One of them is the Phileas Club, which the latest episode of is a focus on India. We had Mayank come on the show and tell us how it was for him growing up in India in the 80s and 90s and all the way to how it's how life is in India in recent years. So if that's of any interest to you, go check it out at frenchspin.com. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at NotPatrick.
And of course, Alex Van de Sande, thank you again. If people want to find out more about Ethereum, I assume they should go to ethereum.org. Anything else to let folks know about?
No, I think that there is a good resource. We try to build the basic technology behind all these blockchains and smart contracts. We are not an ICO platform. We are mostly about building smart things with blockchains. I think that's important.
Excellent. Thanks to everybody who supports this show directly. We're always trying to get just at least, if not more, one more patron each month than last month. We're getting close. We're getting close to having one more than last month. So if you've been thinking about supporting the show, now's your time to shine. Become a producer. You can become a producer at only $1 a month. That's 5 cents a show. And of course, we got cool perks for those of you who want to give a little more. Everybody who supports the show gets the full pre and post show in an audio form that gets posted on Patreon and is available as an RSS feed. And you can hear us talk about video games and distribution on the blockchain in the pre-show today. So you might want to check that out at patreon.com/DTNS. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're live Monday through Friday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC at alphageekradio.com and diamondclub.tv. And our website is dailytechnewsshow.com. Back tomorrow with Scott Johnson. We'll be talking about the new Galaxy Note 8. Talk to you then.
Is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
That was fantastic. Alex, thank you so much.
Thank you. I loved being in the show.
Oh, that's awesome. The
promise from the beginning was entirely fulfilled. I now understand 100% more than I did before. Thank you.
That is awesome. That is awesome, not Patrick. By the way, Patrick, once I think I sent you via Twitter, when I finally understood your Twitter handle, it's actually that Magritte painting, right? CC is not Patrick, right? I think that's that's where you're going with it.
Probably. To be honest, I'm not even sure where I'm going with it, so let's say that's where it is.
Well, Alex, I don't know if you're familiar with the live stream, but after we're done, we hang around and just kind of randomly chat while I produce the show. You're welcome to join us, but if you need to go, please go. There's Veronica always has to leave and go back to work on Mondays, so it's entirely up to you.
Okay, I'll hang up a few minutes and then I'll leave.
And then
very nice being here.
Okay. Well, you can help us pick the title then, Roger. What do we got for title suggestions?
So titles, we have Bark Chains, Estonia is a Cloud Country, Indeterminate Tokenized Sale.
ITSs.
ITSs. We have Verizon's new Verizon's new limited plan, Software Unlimited, Tom's Dogs Agree, Barking at Blockchains.
I like Barkchain, actually. That's really funny.
Estcoinia. Code 42 crashes your backup plans. Yeah, I got to figure that out. Patrick Technophile senses tingle.
That one's good, too.
Blockchain. Crash plan crashes for consumers. Unlimited except for when they limit you. Facebook is for grown folks.
Make control your own comes coin.
To the coin. Make your own coin.
I like make your own coin too. What do y'all think?
I like the Estonia ones.
Estonia is a cloud country. Estcoinia. There's two.
Estonia is cloud country.
I think the most appropriate one would be, and not too jokey one would be, indeterminate tokenized sale. I really like Patrick Technophile senses.
That's currently the popular choice as well.
Maybe you should go with Patrick finally understood blockchain or something like that.
I understood blockchain. It was the ICO things I didn't understand.
Okay.
If you go to showbot.tv, Alex, you can see all the submissions and the votes on them.
Showbot.tv.
Software Unlimited is pretty
good. Is that from Veronica?
No, it's not that bot. Different bot.
Okay. Patrick Technophile senses tingle. Orchain. Right.
I was bitten by a radioactive technophile.
Who hasn't?
That is true. Well, Tom, I guess you're going to have to be the deciding person.
Flip your ICO, or flip your initial coin.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the terminology.
You're not a big fan of what?
Of the flip terminology, because it's really about and stuff, right? Flip.
Mm-hmm.
Flip is a financial term.
Toss a coin. How's that?
Okay, toss a coin can be.
Why don't we
toss a coin? Yeah,
get up to a chance to see whether or not a coin that Tom throws up in the air, and then we'll determine whether it lands heads up or tails.
Oh, I can just click and vote. That's cool.
Yeah,
and vote on.
But you can only vote once per title.
I'm torn between Estonia is Cloud Country and Patrick's Technophile senses tingle.
The cloud country is more
germane
to the topic, but yeah. Patrick Technophile senses tingle is funnier.
Hey, I mean, it's just hard to say or read.
We didn't talk about Estonia a lot in the end. We talked about.
This is your argument for getting your name in the title?
I'm not. No, I don't.
All right. I'm going with the popular vote. If I can't decide, we go with the popular vote.
Yay.
Well, it's almost a tie there.
It's getting close.
Yeah.
If by the time that I finish this ID3 editing, it's a tie, then I'll have to change my mind.
Damn it. It tells me I've already voted for it.
You're trying to get it some distance.
Getting our votes. Oh, Estonia is now just surpassed bar chains.
Yes. But Patrick Technophile senses tingle.
Oh, ooh. One more for Patrick Technophile senses tingle.
Oh, and both are by Silverblade too, so it's
he wins either way, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and now we're again 11-10. Well.
Well, I'm exporting. And then I will be doing the final ID3 edit. So
T2T2 has a great suggestion for Showbot. We should set a blockchain to confirm the titles, the Shovel titles don't have, you know, any shenanigans.
They've only been voted on once and everything. Yeah, you have to buy a Shobot coin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then you have the DTNF ICO.
Yeah,
where you sell your Shobot coin.
We just shift.
Zoe brings bacon suggested vote for Patrick as a title. I think it might be a little bit too inside.
Patrick's technophile senses are starting to gain some distance now.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, two votes up.
Are there already projects for blockchain based voting, like elections? Surely there must be.
Well, the thing about elections, I mean, you can do elections in small scale and small voting. The problem with elections on larger scale are two. First of all, it's about privacy. It's still very hard for you to do like a private thing. There are some technologies that enable that, but right now it's still very hard for you to guarantee your vote remains anonymous. And the second thing is really about, I mean, one thing is to launch a blockchain for 1,000, 10,000 people. Another thing, completely thing, it's something for 1 million or 10 million people. But I think that's coming up. There are some social media where blockchain based social media where people are voting up and voting down on stories.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of a little bit more similar.
Interesting.
There's a service called Library too, which is, this is not about elections. This is about video. It just got me thinking about it. Library uses blockchain for assigning digital rights to videos so that they can make them available freely, or you can pay. And then once you've paid, it records the transaction in the ledger.
That's interesting. Maybe then you can start having the initial discussion where you can resell your digital property.
Right.
Maybe
exactly. Then you have
where maybe there should be something where if you buy the video before anyone, you can resell it for more. Right.
I want to resell a movie ticket to a movie I already watched, but I would sell it at a discount.
That's essentially what you do when you sell a DVD, isn't it? So,
yeah.
But then that also shows the problem with reselling digital things, right? Because you already used that. I mean, you got the service, right? You bought for a service of someone showing you the movie, and now you're reselling it for.
Yeah, it becomes the issue. Becomes the usage, does it degrade after you've used it or not? And even Blu-rays and DVDs somewhat do degrade. So if you buy the secondhand one, it's not going to be as pristine as the first one. Whereas services or digital items obviously don't degrade. So maybe we should insert artificial degradation into digital products or services to
make actually sense. there's a great project by Google, not by Google, by a company some sort of affiliated by Google, that they are doing that with blockchains and ebooks. And I think the idea is that they build an ebook and they had a limited amount of books that you could have, and then every time you got a book you had the right to sell it, but in order to sell it you had to delete a word and add another word. So every time you sold the book, it sort of degraded a little bit and changed it a little bit.
I'm sure none of those words would become penis after, you know.
Oh, that's the only word in the book by the time I got it.
That's sort of like crowdsourcing Shakespeare. Like maybe if enough people go through the process, you create a new play.
Your John Grisham mystery ended up becoming Romeo and Juliet by the end of the transaction.
But imagine how... It would become
I used to read the book before people would change it, but now the book is all changed. It's not cool anymore. I can't stand that book.
How much can you ruin a book by changing one word? Like, surely some of them you can change the entire story.
It was the worst of times. It was the worst of times.
Well, I mean, you know, it would be quite simple just to like substitute a word.
Soylent Green is made of ham.
But here's the thing: you are changing a word on your book, right? you're not changing a book on everyone's book. It's right, sort of right, your copy has that. So every copy of the book is sort of starts to differ its from own, each other.
Yeah.
So a few copies would like become bad and the others would become better. And then like you sell those.
Interesting.
Well, but maybe if your book becomes better, you can like resell it for more.
Yeah.
Right.
You've got the best.
Well, if it's your book and you become, you know, you become famous or something, you can.
Luke,
can you do,
I am your sponsor.
Can you just crib a book and just add, like, say you take a popular novel and you add like five of your own chapters to it, and you can you resell it as, or would you be like, so it's like, hey, you're taking
new
copyright,
yeah, issues. A new piece of work. I'm sure there would be a very interesting court case to be had there.
Well, yeah, because you're combining right of first sale with fair use to make your to mount your defense.
Well, I mean, isn't that the whole thing with Pride and Prejudice, the zombie version?
Yeah, that's the example I was going to.
Yeah, although that's fair use. That's a remix. Also, I'm pretty sure Pride and Prejudice is open, is public domain.
Yeah. At this point, yeah. Now it's 70 years or something, right?
Yeah, our culture is stuck in the 20s as far as public domain goes.
Thanks, Disney.
Are they still expanding it? Because we have to start getting somewhere where things enter the public domain soon, right?
Yeah, it's like life of the author plus 90 or 70 years or something.
70
as long
years.
As 50. Disney is alive. As Mickey Mouse is alive, he's never going into public domain.
I mean, the thing is, they don't need copyright on those old Steamboat Willie cartoons to protect the trademark of Mickey Mouse.
That's what's so weird.
Yeah.
What they're worried about is basically people bootlegging the Mickey Mouse image for other things.
But that's a trademark issue. That's not a copyright issue.
That's an interesting question. I don't know where trademark and copyright, where they start merging, right?
Because
So when you denote author, does it have to be the person or could it be the corporate entity? For example, if I authored a book, but I did it for like Scholastic or like a textbook company, would that...
Well, that depends on your agreement with the textbook company.
But then how does it work with death plus 70 years, I think is the question. Because
well,
if it's a company...
Oh, I see what you're saying. It's the originator of the work. So if you did it for the textbook company, I would imagine it's the textbook company. But it could be... They could define you in the agreement as the author so that they get 90 years after you die.
What if it's
how Mickey Mouse started.
Everlasting.
Roger, that's how Mickey Mouse started, actually. Disney first made a cartoon called Oswald the Rabbit, which is just exactly like Mickey Mouse, just with pointy ears.
And a rabbit.
But then when he gave up the rights to the publisher, which at some point started printing his own story, taking the stories where he didn't want to go. So he just quit, created Disney Company, and made his own little mouse rat. And that became Mickey Mouse.
And Oswald is the property of NBC Universal and owned by Comcast at this point.
Isn't it owned back somehow by Disney?
I think
again?
Disney reobtained the rights to Oswald because they've added him now to a bunch of stuff. I think they struck a deal. But I don't know if they bought the rights or if they just licensed them.
Oh, all right. Well, on that note, I shall go buy the rights to go to sleep.
Patrick's technophile senses will no longer tingle as he heads off to sleep.
Oh, I thought something was happening.
Well, no, just because you'll be asleep. Right. Thanks, everybody, for watching. We'll talk to you later. Goodbye.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye, guys.
Bye.
Thanks for having me.